Did you notice a couple weeks ago, maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but a guy who, when you watch a telecast through the years, and he's got a few years on him now, and he surprised some people by abruptly resigning, and he abruptly resigned, and basically TV broadcasting career is over. And I was sitting there going, you know, looking back on Brent Musburger's time in whatever it was he does, you know, he constantly mentioned point spreads. He's one of the few broadcasters that would say, wow, check it out. Brian Toohey now joining me on the program. TheFixIsIn.net is where you need to be. A guy who we've been talking to for years and years and years, and he's always interesting. Brian Toohey, you're my main man. Even when you spell my name wrong online, it's all good.
Hey, I was close. I got fancy.
It's all good, baby. It's the thought that counts, man. It's the thought that counts. Brian, isn't it interesting that Brent Musburger, and I'm not casting aspersions at him because I don't know whether or not this is the case, but this is something that you've talked an awful lot about in your books, which is there's so much connection between Vegas, the VIG, these sports, what we see that looks real, what we see that isn't real. And the Musburger thing's real food for thought because here's a guy who's quitting to get really into the gambling industry. He's always, obviously always had a fascination / interest in it. When you think back to his career and all the times he quotes point spreads. And now I'm left to wonder how many times he walked into a coach's office. And I'm not accusing him of this. I'm not. But I want to get your thoughts on this. We start here. How many times he's walked into a coach's office on a Friday afternoon late, and they say to him, like they say to all these national broadcasters, they have to implicitly trust those guys. They let those guys get into the catacombs where a local beat writer could never get for just the courtesy of them doing their job. Okay, so tomorrow so-and-so is not going to play. Tomorrow we're going to run this if we see this. Tomorrow we're going to do this if we see that. Here's another thing we've been working on this week in practice. And isn't that play-by-play guy then? Doesn't he then walk out of there armed with a bunch of tremendous information if he wanted to pass it down the line? I mean, that's another buck or two he could make for himself. Am I reaching there or do I have a pretty decent read on this development? What do you think?
No, I think you're correct. I think that, you know, like you said, they have a direct pipeline to these head coaches who it seems like at least, and you don't know for sure, but it seems like from the way they announce the games, that they give them basically their game plan in many ways and tell them, like you said, who's going to play, who's not going to play, what they're going to look for, what tendencies they might do, and that supposedly helps the broadcaster better do his job. But like you said, from a gambling perspective, well, yeah, it's a ton of very valuable inside information and something, you know, that I've heard that beat writers, too, I mean, they're able to ascertain some things directly from the teams as well, and they're known to gamble just the same. So I think, yeah, you know, by giving this information out that coaches and teams do to the writers, expecting one thing, the writers and reporters and broadcasters could potentially do something very different in the realm of gambling. And I always found it funny, too, that, like you said, Musburger brings up the point spread. Al Michaels does it all the time in a very shaded way, too. And it's just funny that, you know, they mention these things, and yet for anybody who's living outside of the state of Nevada, it's useless information, legally, because no one else can legally bet on these games. So who are they telling this to and why? I mean, it's another strange aspect of the game.
And it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't thing when you start talking about gambling because, you know, for a second, for a hot minute there, these fantasy sites with the able to get through the loopholes until they've been relatively shot down, but they became partners with the leagues. A couple of them were, I think, birthed by leagues themselves. or close, or just launched with the cachet of some of these leagues, and these owners were making big money off this daily fantasy stuff, which they tried to say wasn't gambling. Here's my thing. I'm a libertarian, so I'm letting it all go. Okay. If you want to, you know, you want to have the freedom to do that and go gamble all your money, go gamble all your money. One of the things you talk about in one of your books, it's really interesting. And when I bring this up to people, they're surprised. You go across the pond. You go see one of these English Premier League soccer games. Chances are you can go down at the venue itself and place a bet at the window, just like I do when I go to a horse track. It's the same thing there, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And even there are soccer teams that literally on their jerseys have the name of casinos or sports books printed right there. I mean, the sports books are literally advertising on the jerseys of players of certain teams. I mean, that in America is just bizarre and foreign. But I actually wonder, you know, with Musburger's kind of like sudden retirement, if you will, from broadcasting, his immediate entry into this gambling realm, if he's almost maybe as a shill and almost a lobbyist, if you will, for helping spread sports gambling's legality here in the United States, because there has been a sudden push to legalize sports gambling, because I'm like you, if you want to gamble on games, I don't see why you can't do it and do it legally, so then there's some oversight, and then, you know, states can make revenue off the taxes from it and that sort of thing. But I just wonder if maybe Musburger's move has even something to do with that, because there are, I think, four states that have come out just in the past couple of months with bills to legalize sports gambling. So there's this huge nationwide push to do so, and Musburger, obviously with his background in broadcasting and being a familiar face to many sports fans, I think would be very useful in helping to spread that idea.
We're definitely moving in that direction, and I think that it'll be better once you get it out of the shadows, because the shadows create a deal where it just allows too much potential hanky-panky. We've talked on the college level before. Look, if this college thing truly is no money exchanging hands, which I don't think it is, but even if it's just marginal money exchanging hands compared to their pro counterparts, who isn't going to say, somebody comes to me, now granted, I come from a background where I didn't need the money, thank God, but if I come from a background where I'm impoverished and somebody comes to me and says, hey, if you'll give me a few secrets, and you'd say to yourself, well, I'm not hurting anybody, who's hurt, who's not, who looks good on the practice field, who doesn't, whatever, you can get a little information of somebody, who wouldn't be tempted to take that money? And Brian, one of the things you've helped me see is, That stuff not only goes on, it goes on all the time. I mean, it goes on a lot more than we think it does.
Oh, and especially at the college level.
Yep.
I mean, the NCAA has actually polled its student athletes. I mean, I think the last poll was done, might have been in 2012, 2014, one or the other, and they polled some 19,000 student athletes, and amazingly, shockingly, I think, because it's an anonymous survey, there's a percentage, a low percentage, but like it was something around 2 to 3% of all NCAA basketball players and football players who responded to this poll admitted that they were either approached for that sort of inside information, gave out that sort of inside information, or approached to shave points, or did actually participate in shaving points, or knew of someone who had participated in shaving points. And so even at that small percentage, if it's 1% who admitted to doing this, that's perhaps as many as 200 games, NCAA college or football games, that were manipulated for gambling purposes. Mm. And where are all these investigations? Where are all these scandals? I mean, it's non-existent that you see that it comes to light, but these guys admitted to doing it.
Brian Tuohy, ladies and gentlemen, thefixisin.net is his website. You put some interesting tweets up about the Super Bowl, and you saw what I saw. On the Patriots touchdown run, there was a hold there that wasn't called. It was an obvious hold. The Patriots, I call them NFL Bama. Bama can go through a whole season without get a holding call on them. I'm not sure how that's possible. Maybe they're just that well coached, and maybe the Patriots are just that well coached and that well drilled. But while the Falcons were having flag day in the second half, the Patriots,
got away
it
with
wasn't
murder.
The same. How real was the Super Bowl in your mind?
Well, I come from it from a different perspective than most fans. So to myself, I recognize, A, that even though it's considered the Super Bowl and it's this big national to-do, it's a football game. I mean, that's basically all it is. It's a game. It really has no meaning or bearing on anybody's lives outside of the guys who are on either team. It's a game. And it's also the biggest and most watched television program in the United States every year. Mm-hmm. So it's really a TV show, and it's a reality TV show. And I think we all know that reality TV isn't really real. So if you come at it from this perspective and realize the NFL's a business and they're out to make money, and, you know, Fox is out to make money, the advertisers are paying $5 million for 30 seconds worth of airtime, that there's a lot of money involved around this simple game, then you can get to this idea of the game might have been manipulated for certain reasons, and that's for entertainment. And let's face it, it was a heck of an entertaining game in the second half, but how legitimate was it? I mean, if you think it was 100% legitimate, then I think you'd have to say, well, why would the San Francisco 49ers hire Kyle Shanahan? I mean, this guy was a complete idiot in the second half of the biggest game in the Falcons franchise history. The guy didn't realize he forgot to run the ball. He forgot that he needed to eat up clock and eat up time and run the ball and seal the game, especially when they were inside the Patriots' 25-yard line with, you know, 3 minutes to go in the game. And you just hired this guy as your head coach, the guy who really kind of blew the Super Bowl. And then you also have to ask yourself, well, if it's 100% real, then it was a complete systematic failure in the Falcons, not just their coaching, but even in Matt Ryan in the offense, where nobody said, hey, shouldn't we maybe run the ball here and eat up some clock? Should we maybe, you know, run the play clock down to like 1 second before hiking as opposed to 20 seconds? I mean, I think there's a lot of questions that can be asked about what happened, especially in the second half of that game. And I think there's a lot of fans out there who've watched a lot of football and recognize these same things and realize, man, something just wasn't right.
It's interesting. And you have, when you start looking at that Super Bowl, you have an angle on a couple things. The run at the end of the game where they get into the end zone, and you got a shot that shows that the ball carrier's down before he gets to the goal line on your website.
Well, I think that was actually taken after. I think he broke the plane and then he came back and the picture was taken after he was down. So I don't think that was actually a legitimate thing, but I think, you know, on the 2-point conversion that actually tied the game, there was a clear penalty on two of the New England Patriots wide receivers who were blocking, like, before and during the pass that created that 2-point conversion that was not called. And there you could see, if you watch the replay, there's like three or four Falcons who immediately signaled that the flag should have been on that as opposed to the offsides that was called on Atlanta that kept the game tied.
Wow. It's an interesting deal. So as you share your message with people, which is, as author of The Fix Is In, as author of The Larceny Games, as author of The Season in the Abyss, and now your other book, Disaster Government, National Emergencies and Continuity of Government and You, when you get into these realms, which are unpleasant types of subjects, and we watch a lot of sports, and we see these things unfold, and some of them do look unreal. Like, why would you only run the ball four times in the second half the other day? Why would you get down to the 21-yard line, chance to give yourself a two-score lead, put the game, or a three-score lead, essentially put the game out of reach? Maybe it was a two-score lead. Two-score lead, put the game essentially out of reach, and you choose to throw the ball twice in a row and pull yourself out of field goal range. Who does that? But as you share this message with people, what's the response?
Well, it's amazing, actually, for what I get in terms of email and Twitter responses and Facebook, is all the responses I get are extremely positive. And people almost thank me for saying, you know what, I've thought this same thing, but nobody's bothered to take the time and write it out and explain why it's possible, how it's possible, and how it might be done. And that's kind of what I've done. I've kind of filled that void because, you know, most sports writers don't want to even entertain this idea, and most sports fans don't want to entertain this idea. But the fact is, I think there's a lot of people, again, who've watched a lot of sports, who maybe watched a lot of football, and recognized that the Super Bowl that was just played looked extremely shady. And it looked very much like professional wrestling on a certain level. I mean, I tweeted out that, you know, the comeback by the Patriots seemed a lot like, you know, Hulk Hogan being choked out and his arm goes limp the first time the referee picks it up. It goes limp the second time the referee picks it up. But the third time, you know, he holds and he makes this dramatic comeback and all the fans are excited. And that's what the Super Bowl looked like. And even on top of it, you had the fans that, like, hate Vince McMahon and the professional wrestling world and boo him when he comes out. Here comes Roger Goodell, who essentially fills the same role for the NFL, and he gets booed the same way immediately after the Super Bowl. I mean, it seems so much like a show, I think fans should recognize it.
It's incredible. We talked with Brian Toohey today. He always makes me think. Are there any other things recently that have taken place in sports that are worthy of reflection in terms of was that real, was that not?
Oh, well, the Cubs made that dramatic, you know, 3-1 comeback in the World Series. That I thought was a little shady in a couple of spots. The Cavaliers made a similar comeback. I mean, it seems to be the past 6 months we've had three huge dramatic comebacks in the three biggest sports finales you can have, and nobody, you know, nobody out there in terms of the major sports media is questioning any of it. They just revel in it. And I think they also then mock people like me. And there's a lot of people out there. I mean, if you Google or you go to YouTube right now and put in Super Bowl 51 fixed, you'll see how many videos have been posted in a matter of days saying this didn't seem real to me. And yet they mock people like us for, you know, questioning a business, for questioning an entertainment business that might be providing something that's not 100% true and just masking it as sports.
You know, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens with gambling in this country, sports gambling. Your thoughts? I think in our lifetime, Brian, I think we're going to see legalized gambling, sports gambling across the board eventually. What do you think?
I would agree with you. And like you say, I think it's a good thing because yeah, I think, too. Like you said earlier, it would bring it up from the shadows.
Yep.
I mean, it would actually help people who have gambling problems, who can't bet with their bookie on credit, which gets them into deeper and more trouble, and that leads to loan sharking, and it leads to the guy knocking on your door to break your thumbs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it also, like I say, it provides oversight not just to the sports gambling industry, but actually to the sports world.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we've seen in soccer and other sports around the world, when the sports gambling industry sees something strange, they flag it, they investigate it, and if it seems really strange, they'll turn it over to actual police and law enforcement. And that's what's led to this whole rash of game-fixing scandals in soccer, in tennis, in rugby, and in cricket that we've seen all over the world. But supposedly here in the United States, well, our sports are clean, despite the fact that 98% of the sports gambling done is done illegally.
Brian, share with the living listener on the way out how they can find you. And for those that don't understand what he said there, let me put it in this context. So in Italy, they had a few funny things that happened in the soccer world. And because it's legal there, because it's above board, they were able to go to the authorities and say, hey, the money went this way, the game did this, something doesn't fit here. In this country, if that were to happen, while 80 to 90% of that money, I don't know what the number is, 65, 70% of the money, even 50% of the money, is illegally bet on something, Vegas is not going to go to said authorities and say, oh, by the way, 50% of our money was ill-gotten gains here, but we want you to look into this. Until it becomes legal, the ability and the motive is there to fix something until it becomes above board. And that's all we're saying. And I think that's what Brian's saying. That's certainly what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
And Brian, on the way out, share with the listener where they can find you. And I appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Tony. And well, I was going to say too quick about the Super Bowl. I mean, in Vegas, about $140 to $150 million was wagered.
Yeah.
But estimates were outside of Las Vegas, something like $4.5 billion was wagered. So, I mean, that's the discrepancy, you know, we're talking about. But if people want to find me, email me. Look up my books. The best place is my website, which is thefixisin.net.
Fixisin.net. Thank you, my friend. Great talking to you.
You too. Thank you, Tony.
All right. The great Brian Toohey. At Tony Basilio is where you find me on Twitter, where 16,000, a couple hundred folks have. And during that segment, Atticus Truth said, if it's fake, I don't want to know about it. He's stealing the wonder out of my eye. Well, that's okay. I get that. Sorry about that, man. Pop says there were six penalties on third downs. on two consecutive drives that kept the Patriots drive moving down the field in the first half. He calls them false flags. I'll say this to you. I believe that there was an absolute tackle by a tackle on a linebacker on that touchdown run at the end of the game. A complete and total takedown that wasn't called. Not only wasn't it called, the announcers on television didn't even mention it. They didn't even look at it. They didn't even consider it. And it was a complete takedown. Now, was New England going to win that game anyway? Sure. New England was going to win that game anyway. Were they going to put the ball in the end zone anyway? Sure. But Maron, make the thing, I mean, at least make the thing look legitimate. But Brian's got a great point. And I was talking with Bino about this earlier in the week. If you're a 49er fan, and you're looking at, boy, that's our next coach, and he was just gifted a 28-3 lead as an offensive coordinator in this league and couldn't win the football game, how am I going to get excited about his hire? That just doesn't add up. That to me, that's one part of that equation. Can you imagine if that was the biggest football game in the world, which is what the Super Bowl is, biggest sporting event in the world, the cause celeb for America, our great cultural celebration where people gather and probably more in numbers to watch that game than most of our holidays, truthfully. I mean, we had a couple people, guy we had on earlier in the week, from Ole Miss was telling me that he had 30 people gathered in his house for like the 25th straight year. Point is, it's a huge cultural deal. Super Bowl's this huge cultural deal. And I kind of think that was real, and I kind of don't know. Because again, all those drives that stopped, all those penalties that stopped Atlanta drives, and then those penalties that kept New England drives alive. It's just, I don't know. I'm not saying that the refs are on the take. I'm not. I'm just saying it's just interesting to consider. And then the whole thing about college sports are extremely interesting because, again, you're back to this. And Tennessee just saw this a minute ago. Tennessee just saw this a minute ago with letting this Spagnardi guy go. That's a story, if you dig into it, that's a little ugly. And he got caught, I believe, with his hand in the cookie jar. But I believe he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar because he was looking around and going, now wait a second here. I'm making a pittance doing what I'm doing, and we have assistant coaches here making $500,000. Now, if that guy feels that way, how do the players feel? I mean, that's a legitimate question. That's a legitimate question to ask you.